Thanks. Let's go ahead and get started. Agenda is here. On the agenda today, we've got quite a bit to go through. There's a terminology poll that we're going to just do an update on. We've got an update on an implementer commitment summary survey that's gone out. We need to talk about the verifiable claims architecture document, a bit about the primer, a bit about data model spec use cases, and then note the items that we believe are good enough for review at this point. Is there anything else that we need to discuss today? Anything else on the agenda? Okay. If not, let's go ahead and get started. Terminology poll is up first. Last week, we called a poll to figure out some terminology that we needed to get decisions on. The poll is there. If you have not filled out the poll, please do so as soon as possible. It closes tomorrow, and we need anyone that has an opinion to weigh in on that. I'm trying to see if I can see how many votes we have so far. Log in.
I was kind of curious why there wasn't two rounds rather than one. I was kind of felt arbitrary in my second choices, and would have preferred to sort of see the first round go through and then have an opportunity to pick between running up.
This is an instant runoff vote poll, so it's an IRB poll, so that automatically happens as a side effect of the poll. Also, keep in mind that we are not making permanent decisions. We're just trying to align our terminology before we send this stuff off to review. We can always change our minds later if there's consensus behind the change. Does that address your concerns, Christopher?
Sure. Delphic polling is usually better in the long run, but which is where there are multiple rounds for poll for things. But I'm fine.
Okay. We did it this way because we're pressed for time and we need a decision by Wednesday. So we didn't really have time to do multiple polls like that, even though I agree with some of what you said. The current votes received are 26. That's pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty good sample set based on the number of people that typically participate. Okay, so please submit your votes for the poll. Be very careful about ordering when you do vote, because the ordering matters a lot in the runoff vote part of the poll. Who is 612? Oh, no, it's Shane 212 that just joined. Who's that?
It's Rebecca Simmons.
Okay, hey, Rebecca.
Hey.
All right, next topic up is the implementer commitment summary. For those that filled out the initial poll on whether or not they agree with the direction of the work, the problem statement, the scope of work, deliverables, all that kind of stuff. We have been, a number of people said that they are interested in implementing this poll that we're sending out, opened yesterday and closes this Friday. So again, very short run for the poll. We're asking those same people if they're going to, if the standardization process is successful, if they would deploy. So we have a preliminary set of responses back already, which is at the URL that I just put into chat. So we've gotten responses back from ETS, Verisys, Respect, New Zealand Governments, Blockstream, Digital Bazaar, OpenLink. So pretty healthy, set of responses back so far. What we're looking for here are commitments by large organizations or small organizations that have a ton of reach, meaning that if verifiable claims are deployed through these companies, they will reach tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people. So just an update. We're getting those commitments in. If you did not get an email and you plan on deploying this stuff, please let me know so I can give you access to that poll. Send me an email or something. Okay, any questions or comments on the implementer summary? All right. Next up is the verifiable claims architecture. This is the primary discussion point for today. We have, I think, roughly like between 3 and 4 proposals, depending on how you look at it, on the table. Let me talk through them really quickly. And Dave Longley, if you could get the link to your diagram while I'm talking, that would
sure.
be awesome. Okay, so we have for a long time in this group had an architecture that we've been talking about, but had never really written in a concise way. What we're trying to do is we're trying to convey what this architecture looks like to the W3C membership. So this is 419 people, 380 of whom have just never seen this work before, so we need to give them something crisp and easy to understand. We discussed this architecture at the ID2020/Rebooting Web with Trust 2 design workshop, and Dave Crocker and Justin and his team kind of took a look at it and started breaking apart and looking at it. We have since gone through multiple iterations after ID2020 and ended up here with this document that I just put in IRC. We circulated that document among a number of people. People were cranky about the diagram in one way or another for various reasons. We collected that input and then created a separate diagram trying to align, trying to find consensus among all of the opinions and trying to put together a coherent view of the architecture. One of the things that we found with the architecture in that link, in this link that is in IRC, just the slash architecture link, is that we found it very difficult. We were trying to do one diagram, and it became very difficult to do one diagram and label all the flows of information. The diagram got fairly cluttered. The second criticism was that the information flows, Dave Crocker saying it would be good if we just showed unidirectional information flows, a number of people commented that the information flow is entirely dependent on whether you view it as a push or pull thing, which was countered by Dave Crocker saying it isn't about push or pull, that's down low level, you know, in the protocol details, we should be talking about information flows. And still there was pushback on, you know, well, it depends on your point of view, you know, what the information flows are, which means, you know, where do you put the arrow in the diagram? Do you put it from, you know, A to B or B to A? So there was concern around directionality in the arrows. There was concern around adding all the labels, creating too much clutter in the diagram, meaning it's harder to understand. And in order to try and reconcile those things, we tried multiple approaches. So the first thing was that Dave Longley sat down and kind of took a look at creating a unified diagram with the information flows. And that diagram is right there in IRC, so if people want to look at that. So the number of people kind of responded to it. It's an improvement over what we have. There's still a question about whether or not we're trying to do too much with one diagram. The other thing is, the other attempt that was made was this architecture diagram where we specifically did not put in any of the arrows or any of the labels. We just, in the first, you get a link. So if we take a look at, so one of the additions we did here, sorry, I'm having to find the hash links in the document. Tribal claim. So one of the things that we weren't doing in the other documents was talking about what a verifiable claim actually looked like. Like, what is the data that goes in a verifiable claim, right? So these are the messages that bounce between most of the roles in the system. So we have a graphic now around what goes into a verifiable claim. The block diagram attempts to ignore basic architecture. The block diagram, which can be found here, tries to not put arrows or labels on the messages going back and forth. It just says, here you go, here are the basic roles in the system, and then leaves it at that. And then if you go down to some of the exemplary use cases, or we have one exemplary use case, let me find, look at that use case. So we have flow diagrams that try to document the information flowing between the various roles. So this is where we try to label the information flows and the direction of the messages. So if you look at 4.1, that's registering an identifier. Section 4.2 is requesting a set of claims from an issuer, and section 4.3 is presenting those claims to someone requesting those claims. So this, we tried to split what the ecosystem, the roles in the ecosystem from the flow of information in the ecosystem, and we tried to make it into a more of a narrative rather than trying to explain everything in a single image. Dave Crocker did send a post in this morning with concerns and suggestions with this direction, but his email hasn't made it through because he hasn't sent something in the mailing list yet, and it needs to be approved by the W3C staff. So let me Dave, are you on the line, Dave Crocker?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you mind going over
your?
I just discovered that
IRC completely eliminates line markings when I'm posting. Sorry about that, guys.
It's the client you're using.
Okay.
Actually, no. You're right. Yeah. It's the client you're using. Anyway, go ahead. Go over the concerns.
So let's see. I had not noticed from your email that there were actually three proposals for the architecture document, and each of them is interesting in different ways. In terms of the comments that I posted, I did note one posting this morning that said the arrow issue is a red herring. I actually don't think it is. I think it, in terms of helping a viewer of an architecture diagram gain some understanding of the relationships between the boxes, making choices about what the lines indicate in a functional or semantic way, and therefore what arrows to attach is actually not at all trivial and can be extremely helpful. And so showing lines with no arrows at all, it doesn't actually tell you anything interesting. Having arrows on both ends makes an implication that they're interacting, but it doesn't tell you anything about what's being done, what's being accomplished. And so the underlying point here is as soon as you start trying to have a diagram show useful things, is worrying about what level of useful things it's showing. And I make a very big distinction between the higher level abstractions, which is what I think architecture diagrams are for, versus lower level implementation choices, which is what protocols do. And the tendency, since most people tend to think in terms of implementation, is to want to put implementation choices into the diagram, at which point it's no longer an abstraction, it's just a design guide. And I think that for the kind of discussions going on here and that need to happen in the community for understanding the general utility of this service, is it's important for the diagrams and to have information that works at the abstraction level. The only other significant comment I'll make, and I'll make it really quick, is the current round of the specs have the holder register the identifier, and this conflates the role of the holder with the role of the subject, and I think that's going to turn out to be an unfortunate choice.
This is Chris Allen. I wanted to add that I think part of the problem was that they were called information flows, when in fact, in a sense, they're knowledge flows. And what I mean by that is that it's not about how the data flows in the protocols or whatever, but it's how the knowledge about the claim is moves from one party to another. And that maybe some way of clarifying that it's the arrows are focused on where does the knowledge flow or where does the claim flow might help.
Okay. Let's pause and see if anyone else has comments on this. There's one other issue that we tried to address with this most recent rev, but let's not get into that just yet. Any other comments on the diagrams? Have people had the chance to review these diagrams and effectively have an opinion on what you feel the right direction moving forward is?
This is Joe. I have a comment or question.
Go ahead, Joe.
So in these conversations, the unity between the holder and the person who's representing the claims is a bit confusing to me. And I'm just curious, how firm is that terminology? And it may even be an architectural shift, hence why I'm bringing it up now, in that it seems to me the claim need not be held by the person who's asserting it. And if that's true, if that's a use case we want to support, then I think that would shift potentially the architecture. And by held, I guess I mean who controls or owns the digital representation?
So all of the words that you're using are slightly loaded language. So own is problematic. We'd have to figure out your definition of own and the one that we've
been
using. Along with here, I will try to communicate it to you, understanding that the terminology is not nailed down. Everyone's still using different terminology. So you can hold on to a set of claims that's about something else, and it is still a topic of discussion. What the best way to model those things are. The data model we're using is very flexible, and you can model it in a bunch of different ways, and I don't think we have no decisions have been made on the right way to model something. We're trying to keep things flexible and open. Dave Longley's on the queue. Go ahead.
Yeah, so what I wanted to say was that I think generally in this architecture, the role that actually has agency is the holder. The holder has what I would describe as control over the claim. They're the ones that goes out and acquires a claim that is about a particular subject, and they're the ones that typically present that claim. So the subject itself generally has no agency. The subject is the thing that you're talking about. Now, the thing that you're talking about could be some aspect of you, yourself, in which case you being the holder, you could also be talking about some aspect of yourself as the subject. And so you could go out and get a subject identifier for some that's supposed to represent some aspect of yourself, and then carry that with you as the holder, head over to an issuer, get a claim assigned to that subject, and then take that and take it over to a consumer to get access to some kind of resource or some service that you want to use. So the point is that the subject should be thought of as sort of just the thing you're talking about, kind of without agency, and the holder is the thing that has agency and controls and moves the claim, acquires the claims and moves them around. On top of that, we have a concept of a credential repository, which we've, for the purpose of the architecture diagram, we've kind of just, it's not shown in the architecture diagram because it's kind of part of the holder. That being said, it doesn't have to be the same party as the holder, but we're trying to avoid talking about that in the simplest version of this diagram. But in terms of how the architecture actually works, a repository could be a separate party that you delegate the storage of your credentials to, and you could switch that repository out over time if you want to use, you know, some other piece of software, some other agent to handle storing your claims for you. But the holder is the main role, the main party that effectively goes out, acquires, registers a subject identifier, acquires claims, and presents claims.
So two different holders will register different identifiers for the same person, for example?
Yes, they could. If they want to talk about the same person, and what's important is that the holder be able to assert ownership over the subject identifier that they've created, because otherwise they won't be able to go to an issuer and say, well, I own this identifier, you can give me a claim for it. So it could be that a subject identifier ends up being shared by two different holders if they both agree to, and this is an implementation detail, but if they both agree to share ownership over that identifier. But simply put, in the common case, a holder is going to register their own subject identifier, and every holder is going to do that and register as many of these as they want to refer to different entities that they want to have acquire claims about and present claims about.
So when somebody receives a set of claims, like under this circumstance, or they can have any idea whatsoever who or what the identifier refers to.
Right. So to give a scenario, a holder would go out and register a subject identifier, which is just an opaque ID. It means nothing, but as an implementation detail, they would have the ability to cryptographically prove ownership of that identifier. Then what they would do is head over to an issuer, and at that issuer, they would need to provide proof of who they are in some way. Either they could use other claims that they already possess, or they could pass information like we do today, just to websites, pieces of private information to the website over a secure channel. Whatever it is that it takes, they might take a test, it doesn't really matter. After the issuer evaluates them and determines that the party on the other end that they're talking to is who they say they are, and the issuer gets proof of ownership over the subject identifier, then that issuer can make assertions, can generate the claim for that subject identifier and hand it over to the holder, at which point the holder holds on to that and then can take it out and use it at whatever consumer they want to.
So my question had to do not with what causes the issuer to believe that they should issue claims to the holder, but rather the recipient of the claims, I see my language was confusing. I'm talking about whoever contacts the holder and gets claims from the holder. How are they going to have any idea whatsoever who the subject is?
The only way that they know who the subject is based on what the claims are. That the claims establish identity about the subject. And so the consumer, which is what you were calling the recipient, has to do two things. One thing is they have to get proof of possession of that subject identifier from the holder. They have to know that the holder actually owns that subject identifier. And then they look at the claims and where they come from. And so the claims are going to have the pieces of information about the subject that they care about. So for example, a claim might say that this subject's name is Dave Crocker. And if that claim was made by an issuer that the consumer trusts, then that is sufficient information for them to do something with that piece of information.
So this idea that a consumer figures out who the claims refer to based on a collection of attributes, there is an existence of that whole
I'm losing your audio a little bit.
Sorry.
I can hear you now.
Okay, so I'll try to say that again really quickly. The model you're describing, where it's the collection of attributes or claims that gets used to figure out who they refer to, is a popular reference. But what I don't know is where that model has been demonstrated viable at scale.
Generally speaking, the notion of somebody visiting a website today and asserting who they are to the website today has to do with a previous relationship that they have with the website. So they might have shown up and created an account and at some point taken some tests at that website. All that we're doing with this model is shifting trust. So you might go to an issuer, take a test at that issuer, and establish that you take a test there and establish that you've gotten a good score or something to that effect, and you receive this claim from the issuer. We're taking that trust that you have in the issuer, and we're converting it over and handing it over to the consumer, and saying if the consumer trusts the issuer, then you can also trust that I took this test and I got a good score. And that same model is exactly what, for example, all of the authentication systems that are in popular use today are using, OpenID Connect and all of those sorts of things. You are trusting that the service that is providing the authentication service is doing a good job. And so a relying party is trusting that an authentication service, for example, like Google or Twitter or Facebook, is doing a good job at authenticating people, and they're placing their trust in them. And this model, in that sense, is not any different.
Yeah, except it's completely different, because the existing stuff is only about validating the consistency of use of an identifier. And what you're talking about here is building an entire trust model, which is what claims are about, on top of that. And it is more distributed. You're talking about something that is distributed in ways that it isn't.
If your assertion is that what we're doing is new, I would agree with that, because we want to do something new and create something more here. So it is certainly true that we're doing something new when we're trying to extend that model and make it so that there is a way to exchange verifiable claims on the web. So we are building that. So if your question is, has this been proven yet, the answer is no, because we're building that. But in terms of the general model and the general idea, those things do exist for other purposes.
Let me jump in here. We are way off in the weeds. What we're trying to do is make some decisions on the set of documents that we're presenting to W3C. What we have just spent the last 10 minutes talking about is stuff that we have talked about in this group over the last 2 years. I appreciate that, you know, Dave, you're new to the group and you're trying to wrap your head around it and you're coming up to speed very quickly. But this is the only call that we have to make some decisions on these documents. And we may have to make those decisions not having a complete understanding of the ecosystem, which, again, I agree is a bad thing to do, but the alternative is not getting these documents in front of the organization that's having a face-to-face meeting in 2 weeks. So let me try and reiterate, let's try and focus on choosing a set of documents that most closely represents the architecture that folks feel we have, if that's okay with the group. I mean, we can go off and start talking about how this stuff is implemented in the details, but my concern is that we're not going to get through the rest of the decisions that we need to make, and as a result, we're going to have to make some hard decisions on whether or not we're actually getting this in front of the Web Payments IG or not.
This is Chris. Sorry I can't get in the queue. I don't have IRC. I'm in my car. I'll put in my preference. I think less arrows is better. I think no arrows is bad, and I think double-ended arrows is often bad. So I'll just, you know, I think the key thing is, you know, helping people understand it's not information or data flow. You know, it's not the protocol. But I do believe arrows are, you know, arrows and simplicity, you know, simpler arrows, the better.
Okay, let me, so that's good. That's great. That's the type of feedback that would be helpful at this point. I think the questions are going to be, let me try and ask some direct questions. So, and then people feel free to weigh in, put yourself on the queue and weigh in. The first question is effectively what Chris just, you know, asked, is there a preference for errors in the diagram? The second question is an image of the structure of a verifiable claim, what goes in a verifiable claim, is that helpful and should we include that? The third question is, are flow diagrams that show an exemplary use case and how information flows, are those flow diagrams at the bottom of the V4 document helpful? And then the final question is a document that attempts to combine those things, which is kind of sort of what Dave Crocker is asking for and kind of sort of what Dave Longley has worked on, is a diagram like that important to have in this architecture document? So sorry, I kind of rushed through those questions, but direct answers to those questions are going to help the editors figure out what to put in this document. So go ahead. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I believe the answer to all four of those questions is yes. I do like the V4 documents, and not sure how I feel about the difference between the V4 and the V4 detailed in terms of having more entities represented in the swim lanes. But I do think that that those timing diagrams really does help work through things. And perhaps Dave Longley's sort of arrow flow diagram all in one might also be useful as a way of, as an alternate way of representing this in one picture, which basically could be viewed as sort of the union of all of the time flow diagrams. But I'm in the middle about that one, but I do see value in it.
Okay, Dan Burnett. Dan, you might be muted. Oh, I just got dropped. We'll put you back in the queue and go ahead, Drummond.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I like Dave Longley's consolidated diagram for the big conceptual picture, and I like the sequence diagrams because they're always, you know, detailed enough and folks know how to read them.
Great. Thank you, Drummond. While we wait for Dan Burnett to dial back in, there was Greg asked about, you know, there's a detailed diagram that adds more actors into the system and kind of a simplified diagram. It's the V4 is the simplified diagram. And if you scroll to the bottom of that, it's got a link to the detailed architecture, which adds the repository and something that we are kind of calling this inspector. The reason for that was that the proposal that Dave Crocker put forward had kind of this concept of a basic architecture and then kind of an enhanced architecture. These two different documents, the V4 and V4 detailed, are not exactly that, meaning that we're saying there is one architecture, but we're trying to boil it down into its essence. In the V4 document and in the V4 detail document, we're expanding it a bit so that people can kind of see the more different moving parts if they want to. So I think the proposal would be to have the V4 thing there and have a link to the V4 detail document for those that really want to see the gory details of how the holder and the repository may interact. Dan Burnett, you're back.
Yes. So I did want to just say, with respect to the specific point about whether what's in a verifiable claim or a set of verifiable claims should belong in the architecture document, the data model will show that, of course, the data model document. As soon as we've agreed today, I will update the data model document to match what we've decided on terminology and in the architecture. I still think it's useful to have a very high-level version of that in the architecture document, but I just wanted people to be aware there's another document as well that will go into more details on that.
Sorry, that being specifically?
Specifically what goes into a verifiable claim.
Okay, got it.
So, Manu, can you, I mean, again, this is going to be read by ACs, not by implementers. Is that correct? So how much?
That is correct.
So, you know, we also have to be careful that this isn't necessarily, you know, being evaluated by identity professionals. It's being evaluated by, you know, people who do graphic formats and people who do PDFs and other stuff. So they're gonna understand some flow diagrams and stuff, but you know, but they may not understand JSON or you know, other things like that in the same way, or that might be too deep or not persuasive.
Right. Yeah, so we're trying to, I think, to try and build off of that, Christopher, we're trying to keep it very high level for that reason. Now, the other thing I want to raise is that, you know, all of the items that Dave Crocker has mentioned are very valid concerns. I'm trying to balance making sure that we have taken that input into account and made the changes that we feel we can make, you know, based on the time frame that we have, right? So, you know, this is my inbox has exploded over the last couple of days because people have been very unhappy with the amount of churn there has been in these documents. But because we have a bunch of new people involved and because we're trying to make some decisions, it makes everyone very uncomfortable. So with that in mind, you know, after Matt Stone's on the queue, but after that, I'm going to try and propose some ways forward and see if there's screaming and chair throwing, and if there isn't, we'll use that as the plan for integrating, you know, coming up with a final proposal for these documents. Okay, Matt Stone, you're on the queue.
Excuse me. Sorry about that. Everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
The thing that makes me uncomfortable about the block diagram as it sits today, I think sort of echoing earlier comment, is the sort of, it does a reasonable job, obviously identifying the parties or the kind of the roles, but you lose something, the directionality of the, you know, not having some kind of idea of the way the relationships matter. Seems like it's oversimplified. I look at this and say, okay, well, there's four bodies involved, but it doesn't really tell me anything about how they interact necessarily. And so it feels a little empty. Although I don't know what to do about that. But the double-headed arrows kind of don't help either. It's almost the same problem. I'm a little stuck looking at this saying, well, what is this supposed to tell me? What's my takeaway here?
Great, thanks, Matt. Dave Longley.
Matt, did you take a moment to look at the other diagram that we were putting forward that does have arrows kind of showing the interaction between the roles? And did you have thoughts on that?
Oh, is this the Google Doc?
Yes.
And then while you're looking at that, Matt, let me try a couple of proposals. So the proposal is take the Architecture V4 document, which has a number of Dave Crocker's changes in there. Keep Section 2, the structure of a verifiable claim, as an overview. In Section 3, we change the diagram the dashed line non-arrow diagram to Dave Longley's diagram, which he just put in IRC, so that we have some arrows on information flow, and we have the basic players in the architecture. And then we keep the flow diagrams throughout the rest of the document. Does anyone have an issue with that general approach to the architecture document?
Can you restate the proposal? Sorry.
Sure. The proposal is as follows. I'm looking at this document. So proposal is looking at architecture V4. And the reason I'm looking at V4 is because in the pros, a lot of it has integrated a decent chunk of Dave Crocker's input. Not everything, but a good chunk of it. I'm proposing that we keep section 2, the structure of a verifiable claim, because that's ultimately what we're going to be standardizing in the first phase. That's what's being proposed, and it's pretty terse and quick. Section 3, the architecture block diagram, we replace the block diagram with Dave Longley's diagram, which has arrows showing kind of the flow of information, who makes the request and how the information gets back, who it's made to, and those sorts of things. So that's the change in Section 3. And then we leave Section 4 alone. We have flow diagrams. And that's the proposal. Matt Stone, you're on the queue.
I think what you're saying is where I was going. I was going to respond to D. Longley directly that I like this sort of concept of the ordinality of the relationship inside the life cycle of a claim, where it's, you know, issued to a holder, it's acquired, issued, and presented. So you get sort of the concept looking at this that there is a flow, but it doesn't get to maybe a protocol level of the rural flow diagram, but it sort of influences some understanding about what's going on under the covers.
Great. Awesome. Plus one. Okay, I'm seeing a couple of plus ones in IRC. Dave Crocker, thoughts at this stage? I know you don't have all the details in your head, and we still need to go through those, but does this sound like an acceptable direction to you?
So the focus is on the V4 detailed or V4 basic?
Just V4 basic, and we will link to the V4 detailed in the V4
okay.
basic.
Okay, got it. Well, I've certainly gone through a range of reactions as I've looked at this over the course of today, which may not seem like much time, but I mostly think it's pretty good. I continue with the view about having the arrows. The distinction between having the diagram, the middle, the Section 3 diagram, being simple as it is here versus detailed or deferring the detail to a separate document, I get it. And I don't have a strong feeling. I mean, I hear the goal, and it makes sense about why it's separated into a different document. I can believe that for a first exposure to any of this for somebody without the background, this probably is about the right level.
Okay.
The proposed replacement, which I think you said is Dave Longley's, the BC Basic Architecture State 1. Visually, it's a lot busier than I'd like. I like the idea of what it's trying to do, but I think some of the busyness is because the big fat arrows that are done as a round trip are trying to talk protocol rather than information or as Chris was saying, knowledge flow.
Do you think that you could produce a diagram? I know you've already done this. I don't know if the question is, could you produce a diagram that kind of takes what Dave Longley has done and puts it in the way that you'd like to see it? And I think your response might be, I've already done that. It's the first diagram that I produced. And if that's the case, we could take a look at that. I'm trying to figure out. It sounds like the only semi-controversial thing is the diagram in Section 3.
So I appreciate it. Let me try to take a pass and see if I come up with anything different. The moving the identified or registry to the bottom where I had it on top is fine and arguably even better. So let me play with it.
Okay, great. And real quick before you go, Dave Longley, we have 9 minutes left in the call. We have many other topics that we need to get to. I think I've seen enough plus ones and not a lot of streaming. So I think we're going to try and do this proposal. So to review, keeping Section 2, leaving Section 1 alone, keeping Section 2, Section 3, the diagram changes to Dave Longley's diagram, and if Dave Crocker produces something that the group likes better, we will put that in there. And then Section 4, we're keeping. At the very end, we link to the detailed verifiable claims architecture, which breaks this down even more. That's the proposal for the verifiable claims architecture that we're going with. Does anyone want to disagree with that direction? If not, we're moving on. Great. Thank you, everyone. Apologies that there's a lot of pressure to getting this done on time. Next up is Primer. Adam, why don't you give us a quick update on the Primer?
Yeah. As far as I can tell, I mean, thanks to Amana's good input, it's basically 90% complete, although I would really appreciate some feedback. And maybe I should send out a request for feedback to the mailing list, just because it is going to be probably the first thing that the ACU reps read and how the whole group is being presented to them. So some feedback would be appreciated, but I think it's very close to being completed as far as I can tell. I think that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Great, Adam. And we're going to be converting this. I think we'll take feedback for the next 2 days, and then we will convert it into an HTML page to go along with the rest of the proposal. Any questions or comments, please put it in the Google Doc. Next up is the data model spec. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, very quickly. I actually haven't done any updates in the past week, largely because of the back and forth emails, the work on the architecture diagram, and so on. With the decision on the architecture today, I will go in and update the data model document to reflect what's in the architecture document, so in terms of structure. And, of course, once we get decisions on naming, I will update that in the document as well. I've had a number of reviews already. The reviews, I think, in large part, concerns have been over confusions around terminology and explanation, which is, of course, something that should be a lot easier to clean up with some of the other decisions that we're making. So normally I try to have a version ready before the call. This time, given the time frame, I'm going to have to do the updates and send it out by email. So just keep an eye open for when I say there's another version for everyone to take a look at sometime in the next few days or hopefully not as late as Monday, but anyway, let's just do that by email. I think the document is close to complete. It just needs the updates and modifications based on recent conversations.
Awesome. Thank you. Dan, a couple of things to keep in mind. I hesitate to say that we may be honing in on terminology that we can use in the architecture document. I don't know if now is the right time to integrate that into the data model spec, but we're going to have to do it at some point, noting that next Monday is just a hard deadline. We have to have all these things ready by next Monday.
Just so you know, Monia, my plan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my plan is actually to go ahead and start updating it today. Based on the terminology in the architecture document, knowing that that could change based on the result of the poll, tomorrow.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great. And thank you. All right. Any other questions, concerns about the data model spec? If not, use cases is up next. Shane, please give us an update.
Sure. Basically, I haven't done anything, which is awful. I have the stuff from Joe, which is great. I've been trying to figure out how to make it reconcile with my worldview. I'm a geek, and I come at things from a technological perspective, and I appreciate the user perspective, and I'm trying to figure out how to turn everything 90 degrees. My plan is to integrate the new terminology, update my diagrams, or throw them out, only because I don't want to ever have this meeting again. And then try to turn things 90 degrees. If I fail to turn them 90 degrees, my fallback position is I'm at least going to use some of the catchy terminology that Joe suggested as a way of making it resonate more with the readers. But that's where I'm at. And, you know, whatever was done before Monday, I mean, I know we got a hard deadline. We got to go.
Right. Okay.
And I'm available if you want to bounce some ideas around.
Thank you, Joe. That's great. And it's not that I forgot. It's that this wasn't the biggest fire this weekend.
Understood.
Okay. So we should note that the data model spec and the use cases are the documents. I'm asserting they're the documents that need to be nailed down the least. Meaning, you know, if people have issue with the data model spec, we can say, well, it's a proposal, right? I mean, it's going to be cleaned up in the working group. And if people have issue with the way the use cases are presented, we can say, well, we can rephrase them a bit. It's still kind of a work in progress. And use cases are never done. So I think we have good responses to, you know, if everything's not completely polished up, it's totally fine and it's okay. Okay, anything else on use cases before we move on?
Yeah, this is Joe.
Oh, go ahead, Joe.
I set out, you know, because it got bounced, it was pretty late in terms of the call. It seems to me some requirements might be a useful output, and that is, you know, not something that's in the charter, because I don't think we're done with the requirements work. In particular, I'm not yet convinced that we directly have a means to address the ID 2020 topics around SDG 16.9. We might, but I don't think we understand well enough to know that we are yet. So I don't know how we might adjust that or even if that's appropriate to bring up now, but I wanted to get into the conversation.
So the way we should redress that is in the community group. If we working groups typically don't work on requirements. You need requirements before you go into working group. The requirements that we have right now are around a verifiable claims data model and set of syntaxes. I agree with you that we don't have anything for the ID 2020 stuff in there. I have been really trying to ping Susan Ramanat and some of the other folks that were there and have been unable to get use cases and requirements out of folks there. I think it's going to take a lot longer. It's going to take time to do that, unfortunately. So I think we should continue to work on requirements in the CG and then merge them into the use cases document as, you know, things kind of happen. And at some point, we're going to turn this use cases document potentially over to the working group. And if the set of requirements and the use cases are in the document by that point, that's great. And if they're not, they're not going to be worked on. Unfortunately, I think it's as simple as that. So I think the onus is on the ID 2020 folks to get requirements and use cases into us. And, you know, I'm definitely very willing to work with you, Joe, on getting that done. I just think it's going to take multiple weeks, and we don't have weeks.
No, we definitely have multiple weeks. I guess my takeaway from your comment is that once our work is done here, there isn't a mechanism within the W3C process to continue requirements modeling? Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, it's a gray area. There is a process. It's what we're doing right now. So we're either a task force or a community group that continues to work on requirements modeling, but nobody needs to ask permission to do that. Right. So
right.
What you're saying is like we don't need to write that down. We just need to do it.
No,
but
actually,
for example,
what I'm saying is we know the requirements change, in almost every system most of us have built, I'm guessing the requirements have changed over the course of starting the project and finishing the project. And so I'm pushing back what I'm hearing as a process of the requirements have to be locked down so that the working group can move forward from there.
Yes. And so in IRC, Dave Longley has said rechartering the working group with new requirements is an option. And, you know, once the requirements don't always drive the output of a working group, as Shane is saying. So the answer to what you're asking for is it's complicated, and we have multiple ways of doing it without asking for permission. And the best way to get stuff done is to not ask for permission. So what you're saying is good, and we should do it. But we should just do it. There's no reason to put any of that in the documents that we're producing right now.
Okay, fair.
Is that okay? And we'll definitely let's talk about this offline as well. Well, we're out of time. I'm going to very quickly cover the items that are good enough to review. So the assertion is that the charter, the FAQ, and the demonstration of support documents are done. So please take a look at them, review them. If you find any mistakes in them, let us know via the mailing list. That is our call for today. Is there anything else that we need to be aware of before the call next Tuesday? I know two things. One of them is if you haven't voted on the terminology poll, please do. And we are proposing, we're presenting these documents to the Web Payments Interest Group next Monday for review. So any comments that you have, please send them in as soon as possible, and we'll try to get them into all the documents. Any other questions or concerns? All right. Thank you, everyone, very much. Take care. Bye.